Okay, people, so it is part two of this week's Echo Chamber, and we have a fascinating documentary, and then we have a conversation with the director and one of the incredible people part of that documentary. So people, you do not want to miss this. All right, sit back and let's go. Okay, so let's get things started with Beyond the Raging Sea. Okay, people, so sometimes interesting things really do just hit you from nowhere, right? Just the other day, I get contacted by Gary Springer, Springer Associates PR. And he's like, oh, would you like to check out this new documentary? And I'm like, send it across, my friend. Send it across. And I'm so glad. Because I got to check out Beyond the Raging Sea. Right? It is the new documentary from Marco Orsini, which he wrote with Frederick L. Green. Marco also produces, along with Lizzie Lamley, Hassan Mufaz. It's executive produced by Omar Samra, Omar Noor, Krasana Katsalias, John Giwa Amu, Ranjhild Ek, and Jack M. Dalgleish. It is associate produced by Bernadette Schramm and Amira Sharif. Field produced by Omar Abdul Razik, Angela Taspas, and Paul Van Wormer. George Agony took care of the music. Cinematography, we got Steve Brooks Smith, Ahmed Gabbar, Gigros Kokalias, Michael Kushner, and Shirley Schumacher. It was edited by Vincent Cataneo and Dionysus Zenos. And the film essentially, visual effects, the graphic people, right? Liam Harris, Kat Michaelis, and Elfie Sayafa. And we follow two incredible gentlemen, right? Omar Samra and Omar Noor, right? So the documentary is about this. Extreme athletes, Omar Noor and Omar Samra, accept the Talisker Atlantic Challenge, a 3,000-mile Atlantic Ocean crossing by rowboat with no assistance and no stopping. Training and preparing for 2 years, Team O2 commit their adventures to the plight of displaced people crossing the Mediterranean with support from UNHCR and UNDP. After a slow start and bad winds, sickness and exhaustion, day 9 dawns in a gale. 600 miles from shore, a rogue wave flips their boat and both men are in the water. With beacons failing, they wait and pray and struggle, fighting 45 knot winds and riding an 8-meter wave. For 13 hours, Samara Noor face the same dangers and decisions of the desperate refugees to whom they dedicated their role. In this true life adventure, survival demands a miracle or two. I mean, can you imagine that, right? It's bonkers. It's bonkers. Now, we've got a statement from director Marco Orsini. And it says, of course, given my ongoing work in emerging countries, I always had in mind the parallels and incompatibilities between Timo 2's adventure and the daily fate of millions born in countries at war, in crisis or collapse, who look to unworthy vessels and dangerous seas for salvation. After so much footage of bodies, children's bodies washing up on shores, the West has become desensitized to this man-made calamity. I wanted to use the power of identification to make us feel something again. In the experience of these privileged, articulate, thrill-seeking guys, I found a space to reimagine the plight of refugees and make their lives with goals and suffering personal. Meanwhile, the audience enjoys a damn good adventure with amazing visuals. This film should sneak up on the viewer. Initially, there's no suggestion of obligation or implication. The Omars chose to do this. They had money, time and training, and they beat back doubt upon doubt to put themselves in jeopardy and their families in fear. And we root for them, wondering how they did it and how bad it got, as we cheer Timo 2 and sympathize with their families. We become vulnerable again to the humanity of the refugee. BTRS isn't an allegory. So BTRS, Beyond the Raging Sea, right? Isn't an allegory. It's a Trojan horse using a man against nature story to smuggle in topics that demand our empathy and action. Which, people, is very true, right? It is that kind of out of sight, out of mind situation when it comes to like refugees crossings. You know, there was a point, I think it was just before the pandemic, right? In 2019, there's stories of, there's loads of boats, right? Huge boats that, you know, they found and they'd like overturned, and there was just all this death and tragedy. And it was like a real conversation. And then the pandemic comes, right? I remember seeing, I think it was mid last year, right? Mid 2023, a guy, actually there was three or four guys were found on the rudder of a big like oil tanker. And I think they were found, right? So they were found mid-trip, which was good for them because I think they were out of water and food, and it was, yeah, it wasn't great. But you just think, how are these people surviving, right? What lengths to go to escape? And you hear the stories. It's like, you know, the people crossing the borders on land. It's not safe, right? It's perilous. And not just the journeys themselves, but these things are rife with predators, right? You have the people who are supposedly bringing them across, right? They'd be like, oh, it's going to cost $1,000. Then it's like, actually, we want two more. Otherwise, we're keeping everything and we're going to take your kids and we're going to, you know, so you have those things, right? Women, children, men, they're raped, right? Human traffickers snatch people for their nastiness. It's just terrible. It's a terrible situation. It's a terrible situation, but it's a situation that oftentimes disappears and we don't think about. So Beyond the Raging Seas is indeed a Trojan horse, right? Odysseus couldn't have come up with a better, you know, way to bring this story, bring this topic back into the limelight, right? And this documentary, it starts off, right? So you have family and friends, because as well as the Omars, we hear from their families, their loved ones, you know, mums, dads, sisters, girlfriends. We also hear from the team who help put the race together, you know. So a few of those. I think it's mainly one lady. One lady from that is talking about this whole challenge and the situation and everything. And then we hear from the tanker crew that came to the rescue. So we hear from that. And then we get into, you know, the Omars talking about what happened, right? I mean, Omar Nuhr's brother, kind of, I think it's Nuhr's brother. He kind of, you know, says at the start, right, out of the blue, he gets a phone call being like, oh, do you want to row across the ocean? Right now, neither of them have rowed before, right? Omar Samara is a extreme athlete, right? He's a mountaineer. Climbs mountains, he's done the Arctic from pole to pole, you know, just different things like that. Omar Nuhr is a triathlete, right? Running, cycling, and swimming, but neither have rowed. Now, you can think, so like they're both fit, right? They're both fit, but rowing is completely different muscles. Right, completely different muscles, and your hands. Holding those ropes, your hands get fucked up. You have to, you know, build those up. You have to build those up. You have to get your body. You're used to sitting in that position, right? Sitting in that position, using your core, all of those things. So you've got all of that, but it's not then just rowing, right? Rowing on a river, rowing on, you know, water that isn't temperamental, let's say, right? If the you know, the rowing team in the Olympics and just, you know, all of those kind of races, that's a feat, right? That you've got to be tough. Got to be tough to do that. But do it on water, which, is not still, right? You have waves and you have huge waves. Huge, huge fucking waves. So rowing on that with the huge current and everything, that's another animal. That's another animal. So you're hearing about, you know, how this adventure came about. But then, you know, what it takes to do it. Like, there's a point when they're like, this is something that's been years in the making. And it's like, we spent the last year and a half. And you're just like, it's not really years in the making, is it? It's not really years in the making, my friend. Like, you know, I don't think you've given yourself a whole lot of time to acclimatize to this situation. And man, it kind of shows, right? It kind of shows because nothing goes right. Nothing goes right from giddy up. So it is something that these gentlemen are able to keep things together. Keep things together. Because how many times do you know people that the minute something starts going awry, they're just like, ah, fuck it, I'm going home. What's the point? But the Omars can't give up because they're out in the fucking ocean. They can't give up. So this is crazy. It's a crazy situation. But the way this story is told, is, you know, both guys are these extreme athletes, but very different, right? Omar Samra, he's a lot quieter, a lot more reserved, and you could say thoughtful in the way he constructs what he wants to say, where Omar Noir is very verbose, right? Very big, you know, he uses his hands a lot. He orates extremely well, right? Extremely well. Like, you'd want him to read an audiobook, right? He's just great at telling stories. So you have these two different characters, but you know, as they say, opposites attract, right? They're able to work together. They have this great friendship. So that makes this so interesting, because you have these two contrasts of people telling this story, intercut with all the loved ones in their life and the people behind the challenge. So we are interconnecting these different pieces, so we get this story from these different angles, from these different points of view, which is so interesting. So interesting. We get these different levels of emotion, The woman who's part of the race team is hilarious, right? But she's British. It sounds like she's British anyway. But, you know, there's one point and she's just like, I knew these gentlemen weren't going to give up, right? That they had the metal. They had the metal to survive. So something was definitely awry. And you just, it's like, the way she just put this together was just like, no shit, kid, right? You wonder as well, because this is this incredible race that people can just sign up to, but you're just like, okay, but what is, you know, the things in place? Because you can't just have, you can't just have anyone sign up, right? Because, you know, everyone's got might have the will, right, the vision to do something, but not the capabilities. I remember as a kid, right? Nike were doing this 3-on-3 basketball tournament. So they done it one year. This was the second year of doing it. And I convinced my friends to join me in a team to go compete. And we thought we were going to do well. Like, I can put together, I feel I can tell a story, people. So I convinced these two fucking idiots to join me in a basketball competition. Me, I have no depth perception, right? I can't see for shit. So I don't even know what I was thinking. I'd convince myself that I could do this thing. Yeah, luckily, the night before, the legend Alton Bird called up, we were around my friend's house, called up, and was just like, hey, we've overbooked, so I'm afraid you guys, you won't be able to compete tomorrow. And it was just like, God damn it. Watching the highlights, it was just like, thank God, as we would have been humiliated. But that's it. We would have been humiliated. That was the worst that could happen. For the Omars, the worst that could happen was potential death. Was potential death. And that's the thing with anyone competing in this. So you kind of think there has to be things in place to stop just anyone competing. Because as we see from this incredible story, shit can get real, real motherfucking fast. Real fast. So it's so compelling, right? You know how it kind of, it must end up. But even so, you are watching it going, and then what do you do, right? And then what happens? And then there's no way anyone can survive that. There's no way you can handle that, right? You're just invested. You are sucked in, right? We've got, essentially, it's people sitting and talking, right? It's people sitting and talking in these rooms. It looks like they're in a cinema, a theater, that kind of thing. A little bit like there was a documentary that I think was it Alexander Jeffries did recently, which is was super interesting. Super interesting, which, oh, it's, my memory can be so terrible, people. It can be so terrible, which is definitely frustrating. What was it? It was, You Have No Idea. That was it. Yes, Alexander Jeffries' documentary, You Have No Idea. And you know, they were sitting around and talking about the issues. And this is a very similar thing. So we have that, but it's the way it cuts between all the different people, right? That's great. And then we do have some actual footage from the challenge and then what happens, you know, the rescue. We do have some of that footage. And we then use these effects. There's some of these interesting effects that are utilized, you know, and then at the end, for the last, 20 minutes, we get a couple of tales from refugees who have made this kind of trip. You know, you've got a couple who crossed, and then this individual guy that crosses. So we hear about, right, the fact that the Omars were doing this to bring light to the refugees' plight, right? And then we hear from a couple of refugees talking about that situation. So it really does open your eyes to the potential, right? Dude, the potential of what can happen and what does happen, right? Because we hear about this because the Omar survived, right? And a great documentary was put together by Marco Orsini. But there, you have to think and understand that so many boats and... boat is a overstatement, probably, like dinghies, rafts, right? How many of these things that are packed with people, you know, they pack them on like human sardines. So how many of these things just sink? Sometimes because they're just overpacked. Sometimes because they're not friggin' you know, seaworthy. You know, they were never going to make that crossing. So how many of these things just sink that we just never hear about? You know, so we get this incredible story, and then we get these true life, you know, depictions of this thing. So it is, it's a ride. You are taken on a ride with this one, people, and it is gripping. It is gripping. Your emotions are everywhere. You know, from beginning to the end, beyond the raging sea has you in its grip, and you will be so relieved at the end. So relieved, because you're just like, fuck, I don't know if I could emotionally handle that shit anymore, people. You know what I mean? So it's definitely worth checking out. Now, it is hitting UK, right? It's hitting the UK from Friday, the 19th of April, and it's going all over the shop, right? Which is incredible. It's incredible. You know what I mean? So you get to go check it out. You know what I mean? And it's playing from the 19th all through May. It is playing in the States, right? In LA and New York, right? So you can go see it from the 23rd, right? From the 23rd. The 25th to the 27th in Cinema Village, New York, and then the 3rd of May to the 5th at La Mala Monica Film Center in LA. You know, and in the UK, as I said, look, it's at Sheffield Dockfest, I believe. Well, it's definitely in the showroom in Sheffield. It's at the Rio. It's at the Bertha Dock House, both in London, right? As well as Tavistock, Wolf, it's there. And then it's all over the country, in Kewick, in Penrith, right? Bournemouth, Oban. Yeah, Corby, Kendall, Eastbourne. So all over the place. All over the place. With new dates added every week. Every week there's a new. So if you go and you think, oh, but it's not playing near me, keep checking, because new dates are coming up. So yeah, it's playing in the US. It's playing in the UK. If you're in the Middle East, it's on Netflix, baby. It's on Netflix for you guys. So, yeah, people, it's all over the place. Go support it. Go check it. And hit up your local spot and say, hey, I've heard about this documentary. Are you going to get it? You know what I mean? Show your support and it will come to you, people. It will come to you. So, Beyond the Raging Sea. It is an incredible documentary. It's an incredible story about incredible humans. Well, crazy humans, right? Crazy humans that got set out to do this insane challenge. But it's also, right, really shining the light on the plight of refugees. So it's an important message, people. Go check it out. Marco Orsini has done a fantastic job, him and his crew. So yeah. Go check it on the website. We'll have links to the socials. We'll have links to their website with all the dates. I'll put some of the dates on, you know, my site so you can see. But yeah, for all the dates, check out Beyond the Raging Sea. Okay? Enjoy it, people. Peace. So now, right? Now, people, we get to sit down with the director and writer, Marco Orsini, right? Now, at the beginning, I didn't know who was going to join us, but at the last minute, Omar Samra was able to come through. So we get to hear from Marco, and then we get to hear from one of the Omars that took the challenge. So it was fantastic, right? We got those different perspectives, yeah, about this whole process. And yeah, I hope you enjoy it, people. So give it up for Marco Orsini and Omar Samra. Okay, people. So today I am joined by Marco Orsini.
Is that Orsini?
Orsini. Marco Orsini and Omar Samra. And we're to talk about the new documentary, Beyond the Raging Sea, that Marco wrote and directed, and Omar was one of the stars of. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time and stopping by to talk about this incredible doc.
Thank you for having us.
No worries at all. Now, this was, man, it's super compelling, right? Two guys attempt to just row across the ocean. Omar, you hadn't done any rowing before this, so why? Why attempt a challenge like this?
Well, I mean, I'm sort of by trade, in terms of the adventure side, I'm more of a mountain guy. Most of my adventures have been climbing high mountains in the Himalayas and other high peaks, and also like in polar regions. I think that the adventure idea came about that I was just on a plane crossing the Atlantic, and then the idea came to me out of nowhere that how amazing would it be to be able to cross that ocean without the use of a sail or a motor. But then I was also craving this idea of, you know, being a beginner again, starting something that I have no experience in, and kind of going into this sort of deep learning curve of learning everything about it. So we had, Omar and I had a year and a half to go from basically two people who were athletes, however, had not really spent much time rowing, certainly not much time in the open sea, to getting quite comfortable by the end, in terms of had spent over 200 hours by ourselves at sea, had, you know, gained all the sort of certifications and trainings and prepped our bodies for the onslaught that would come. But obviously nothing really prepared us for what actually happened, you know. And the interesting thing is that we never had an intention of making a film. That all came afterwards. We were just kind of documenting bits and pieces for our own sort of memory and social media and what have you.
Okay, yeah, because that is the question. Like, you decide to do this challenge, but how does then Marco come into it? So there wasn't the thought at the beginning to make a doc. You're just trying to capture those moments and everything just for yourself. So once it's all said and done, then how did the documentary idea come about?
So the first thing that came about was the you know, the idea of the adventure. Then I had to do the job of convincing Omar Noor to come with me, which I thought would be harder. You know, it proved easier than I thought, which is a kind of testament that I picked the right guy to talk to. And then we went on this adventure. And then before we embarked on the adventure, obviously for myself, being from where I am, I've always been, you know, very much aware of the plight of refugees and everything that's happening on that side of things. So we were doing a kind of a marine ocean journey. And I thought that sort of is a great canvas to use this experience that we're already doing to raise awareness for this cause. And so from that came, you know, a few kind of opportunities to kind of magnify this idea through UNHCR and so on, who Marco had, you know, been doing work with on various, you know, film projects in general, and also, you know, at Cannes Film Festival and so on. So when everything happened, I was invited after we got saved, I went to the UN office just to kind of tell the story, guys. This is, you know, I know you put your faith in us, but you know, we had 9 days, and then this, all of this happened, and they wanted to kind of hear the story firsthand. And this wasn't very fresh, so I hadn't told the story many times. And so Marco was in the room. There was quite a few people in the room. I didn't know who everyone exactly was. And then you know, I asked them if they wanted to hear the short or long version. They said the long version. So 2 hours later, Marco said, well, let me introduce myself. You know, this is who I am, and I'm going to be in Cannes. This was in January of 2018. And he said, I'm going to be in Cannes in May, and I'd like to tell this story and bring it to Cannes in 4 months, essentially. And so I was like, well, I'd never thought of the idea. But and then we had done the adventure. We hadn't succeeded in the goal that we intended. It was a crazy story. But perhaps, you know, the silver lining is now we have this, you know, crazy survival story that potentially gives the opportunity for the cause side of things to, you know, be the main focus. And maybe for us, we were thinking maybe that's why we went on this adventure, for things to kind of go pear-shaped and then for us to be able to be in this position where we can shed light on this cause that we're passionate about. And but I had no idea. I thought if I don't know who this guy is, but if he's crazy enough to make this kind of claim and say that he can take us to, you know, this film festival in a short few weeks. Well, I mean, he can knock himself out. Like let's give it a go. And when we met Marco, you know, I had met him then, and then Omar met him, and then we the three of us really got along from the beginning, and we felt safe that we're in good hands. We had to make some like very important decisions in the beginning. We said, Marco, you know, this is your creative concept. We're gonna fight you on some things, but ultimately you have the final decision. And Marco said, you know, I also want from the beginning that you guys feel that you know this is your project, and also I need you to feel ownership in it. And so this kind of partnership came through there. And Marco was also very supportive in making the film happen in terms of, like, you know, the business side of it and the distribution. You know, we were also interestingly, we were coming at a time when this sort of topic was very much, you know, on the forefront of the news, and which is good because it needs to be. And then since then, you know, COVID happened and so many other things that happened that obviously take the media attention away from, you know, from this. And so I think now we're also in a time, especially, you know, where the movie in some way, you know, it's still as relevant and as pertinent as it was when we first came up with the idea, you know, in a maybe different way, but and this is why we felt quite strongly that we'd like to get as many eyeballs on it for people to see it. And that's really the main motivation for doing this next, you know, piece, which is, you know, taking the film to the US, taking it to the UK and so on.
Well, I mean, if someone tells you they want to make a film and bring it to Cannes, I feel that's probably less of a challenge than let's row across the ocean. You know what I mean? It's already an easier thing to be like, yeah, okay, let's do this.
I think I'm going to say, when I happened to be in Cairo, just to give the other side of this story, if you don't mind, Kevin. To be in Cairo, and I was shooting some things at the time for UNHCR, which is through the Cairo office. And they said, when you wrap, would you come by the office? And I thought it was going to be to talk about storyline or some more shooting, or they said, there's someone here who we want you to meet, and he has a very interesting story, and we think you're going to be very interested in it. And that's all they told me. And I was in a conference room, and Omar Samer comes in UNDP and UNHCR, two different branches. Omar Samer at the time was an ambassador for UNDP. He has since been an ambassador for UNHCR. And he, as an athlete, and as Omar Noor is an athlie, this was sponsored, you know, it was a Talisker Whiskey Challenge, but DHL was the main sponsor of their boat, just to put some ideas of who were the big players at the time. And Omar Samer sat, and he told a story that was very gripping. And I said, first of all, I want to do this film. I know I can do this film. Can I tell you how I see it? And I retold what I heard because it was very fresh. And Omar said, this is the first time someone's actually understood the highs and the lows of the story and the important points and the perks and whatnot. And there's so much in the story that's not there, because there really is a lot more to the story that I could not include, because, you know, you can't include all of it. I had to do it all within a feature length documentary, which is, you just can't include every minute of it. So,
even though Marco, like, you know, we're all in agreement, we had the final say, like, creatively, or what ultimately was going to be in and out of the film, like, we still, like, you know, Omar and I are both, like, you know, sort of can be quite opinionated and sort of like, and this is something that's, like, very close to us, this experience, like, we almost perished. And so I think we gave him, like, a hard time sometimes, because we were like, how come my brother is, you know, not in the final cut, and how come this really important person, and, like, you know. And I think it must have been, like, you know, along with, like, the time frame that he had to go through, I think, like, just kind of managing two characters. And when you meet Omar Noor, he's, you know, we're very different. We're same in many ways, but, like, you know, different temperaments. So also, you know, two completely different type of people. So I think these are some of the things, I guess, maybe. I'm obviously new to the film business, not like you guys. So for me, it's like, these are the kind of things that, as someone who's just been a viewer of films, you know, in the past, like, these are the kind of stories that you don't know. Like, how hard is it actually to get a film to see the light? I always think people film films and they make them, and then they just cut, you know, they show up on whatever streaming platform or whatever channel. Now just gave me an insight of, like, how many movies, potentially, like, good movies out there that just, you know, never get that break. And so for us, it was also like a roller coaster journey from 2019, when the movie film industry was, like, you know, booming, to then COVID basically taking everything out, to somehow us making a theatrical release in the Middle East after it came back and the movie had then been, like, a couple of years out, to now, like, several, you know, quite a couple, you know, a few years on, doing this run. So I think it was like a labor of love, and I think we're very happy to be at this point.
To clarify, what played at Cannes, what played at the Marché, was a work in progress. Yeah. And I was able to get it to play in the Marché full crowd, because at the same time we have a program that I helped develop called Refugee Voices in Film, and it's screening of projects by UNHCR that are either filmed by refugees or are on stories on refugees or on the programming that UNHCR is putting out to either communicate to people on the run, people who are displaced, and giving them information. And it could be in videos for children, animation, in several languages like Oromo, Amharic, Tigrinya, Somali, Arabic, French, English. And so the complexity of doing these kind of, because we also produce this kind of programming within an organization that sponsored this film that I am involved in, because we felt that this story fits in with everything else that UNHCR is trying to do and UNDP is trying to do. And the message at the end of these boys, I mean, this little rowing for refugees, which was a sticker on their boat, I'm sure they didn't imagine that at the end that their boat would capsize. And this message that they're wanting to get through has just exploded related to this film. And it wouldn't have been the same had they made it, because that they didn't make it and they had this harrowing experience, this traumatic and long rescue mission, which everything went wrong in it. It really showed, okay, these two men are educated, well-spoken, bi and trilingual, well-connected, and it took 14 hours to get them out of the waters, and then basically 2 weeks to get them back home. Imagine someone who doesn't understand the language, who's never been on the boat, doesn't have a massive amount of yachts and boats following them just to make sure everything's okay, and chooses to go across a body of water because they feel more in danger not doing so with their children. I mean, I think that's what is important for people to understand this film is an action adventure film, but it asks you one simple question. And this is the question that is asked. If you care for these two rowers at the end and you're applauding that they've made it, then why don't you care? It doesn't matter whether you want them in your backyard or not. Do you care about your, you know, the basic mankind? Do you care about the human that is trying to survive? Do you have any sense of compassion in your heart for their well-being? Again, making the argument of whether they have the right to come over or not, or whether, you know, what those issues are and how people believe. I get it. That's not what this film is about. This film is clearly about asking the question, if you still have compassion in you, do you still have it in you to actually care about the plight of refugees, the plight of people who are displaced as they cross open bodies of water?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, there's so many components to that. Just one question, right? Because I think people do care. But I do think it's an out of sight, out of mind thing. You know, as Omar, you mentioned, there was a point when there was a load of stuff in the news about refugees coming across on boats and the plight of that situation. And then it goes, right? Then the next thing comes along. You know, then it's COVID, then it's Ukraine, then it's Israel, then it's the next thing, then it's the next thing, then it's the next thing. And then maybe, right, there's another a boat capsizing or something. And then we talk about this again for a moment, and then it's the next thing. So it's just
it's like, not a maybe, it's a when. It's an absolute when. Not a maybe.
It's a when, but it's like these things don't always make the news.
True.
Or even stay in the news for very long, you know, when they are in the news. So that's the issue. Right. And it's like, how do we keep this narrative a constant communication piece? Right. Yeah. And then when we are talking about it, what are the steps we take to try and rectify this, to put something in place to actually help? Because you give money, but you're like, where's it going? What's happening? You know what I mean? Like, people never see these things. And I think those things can help people just be like, ugh, what am I doing? Which is just, it's terrible. But it's like, how do we change this?
I think by just basic, if you change your attitude to this, it's not about giving the money for me. I think it's just a slight alteration in how we all today approach one another. We need to change how we are interacting. We have to have mutual respect. There has to be, you know, basic human rights for everything and everyone in some capacity, as well as respect for others who are set in their ways as well, which don't hurt other people. And I think we've lost that. We've lost that ability. Interesting thing about this film, it was a COVID victim, because we did Cannes, and then I took it off the market, and for about 6 months I really worked on it, and it premiered in Guna. I think the next year in 2019 it premiered in Guna. And that was in October. And then it played in Cairo. It sold like crazy in the MENA region. It had theatrical release. No, then Berlin came. 2020 Berlin came. Same year as Cannes, February. We sold it to all of these markets. It did really well in the festival, in the market, with our then distributor, Mad Solutions. And they sold it everywhere. They sold it to theatrical release and, you know, streaming and broadcasting. And then COVID hit, everything closed down. And when things started to open back up again, Omar Noor in Dubai was able to convince the theater to look at the film again in the theater. And he went and they watched the film and they said, we're in. So they took a risk And they opened the film in 12 or 15 countries in the MENA region. And it went for about 6 weeks for a documentary. That's pretty good. And then it went to broadcast, and then it did streaming, and then it died down again. And then at this past Cannes, I approached Cinema Libre Studios on this project, another project, but this one in particular. And they watched it on the plane ride home, and they said, we're going to take it. This is a great film. And I have some really good connections with a distributor in the UK called Munro Films, who have distributed some of my films in the past in the UK. And it, for some reason or another, it's playing in 45 theaters throughout the UK. It's crazy. It's just exploded. I'm really excited about it. And the places that it's playing, like Kendal and Penrith and Worcester and all of these like border towns and outside of, you know, central London. I mean, it's only played in three places in London. One of them is Bertha Docks, which I'm going to. But the other places where it's playing, primarily, it's playing in Bournemouth. It's playing, and people are buying tickets. So I think, first of all, the attitude towards a film that is a documentary and or is not something that's just come out now, but it hasn't been seen, and there's a difference, and they understand the difference is exciting. And second, that, you know, the sales agents and distributors have taken a chance on the film, as well as the theaters have taken a chance, and that it's being screened such a late time in its actual birth is exciting for me as a filmmaker.
But I think that goes to show it's about story, right? Like, if something is interesting, people will, you know, go to it, right? And that's a big thing. It's about compelling content, and this is compelling as hell, right? Two men who don't row set out across the ocean. Like, it's crazy, right? It's a crazy thing. And then, because the whole plight of refugees, we know about it, so that just helps magnify this situation, that it's tied into that. So yeah, I'm not surprised people are kind of gravitating towards this, because as I say, it's interesting. It's a very interesting piece, you know? So I'm glad it's got that success again. And I think it's probably a good thing, because you get this continued life cycle, right? If it had hit everywhere at once, that's your story period. But now you've got all of these different, you know, peaks of news where you can go out and talk about the situation and hopefully just galvanize and get people thinking and communicating and trying to come with a solution to all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Like, why did you kind of settle on film? Like, was there ever a thought of making it a multi-part series, like documentary series, or was it in your mind always a film is the best way?
Well, for me, as a documentary filmmaker, and also all the footage went to the bottom of the sea, there's really a difficult to do a film on that's documentary style without the actual footage showing. And so there's some footage, you know, from the actual part of the scene, the most important part of the film when they're saved, we have that footage, thank God. And we have a lot of the other footage of when they were in the boat on their way, but most of the stuff, all the GoPro, all of the other stuff went to the bottom of the sea. So the way I shot it was I shot it in a theater, a proper theater on stage in Cairo, and I separated the two. And yeah, so I didn't allow either one of them to really be a part of the interview. I was very strict, and I asked them exactly the same questions And I really didn't allow them to retell it. I would allow them to do one clip and then I would cut them off and I'd say, I want you to say this last line, say it again exactly the same. Do it again, I want to turn from another angle, say this line one more time. So all I did in direction was, where do you look? How do you start the sentence? And I need you to repeat that sentence again. And so I had an outline of the script, but the outline of the script wasn't enough to do a series, because a documentary series, but the story was enough to do a podcast, which is what they did.
Right.
Yeah, we made a podcast called State of Mind. It was a limited series, 6 episodes, and we went a different way with it because obviously the story had been told through the documentary. So we did 6 episodes, each one about a different topic. So you've got things like stress, spirituality, different things like that. And we basically had invited an expert on each one. So you had a neuroscientist talking about sleep. You had, you know, someone from UNHCR talking about sort of the psychological trauma that, you know, refugees might face and endure in a journey like that. And so it's sort of, it was kind of extending kind of different facets of the story and of the experience to suit different people and attract as a diverse audience as possible. And then also I think the podcast kind of, like you were saying, Kevin, it was another thing that breathed new life into the movie between the time we sort of our first run with everything that Marco explained with the film festivals and you know, streaming and everything, and to where we are now. So we had periods of where things were a little bit muted, but it was never kind of nothing happening. There was always sort of something or the other.
Yeah. Now, initially, when you set out to do this crazy feat, how were you looking to kind of, you know, promote the plight of refugees? Like once you had finished the race.
Yeah, I mean, we were basically trying to reach out to UNHCR and various other parties all the way to, we actually got confirmation that those guys were on board to support us maybe a week before we set off.
Right.
Things can take quite long when you're trying to reach an organization and trying to find the right person. And so we had already set up a plan that we were going to, we had a satellite modem device, and we were going to like update people through the journey. And we had kind of created a series of posts where we were basically using the experience that we were, you know, doing in real time to kind of say, like, you know, we have, for example, you know, this desalination kind of piece of equipment so we can kind of drink fresh water. But if refugees going through this same experience will maybe have to drink from the seawater, or maybe they will have very, very limited water throughout the journey, and different things like that. But sadly, we never got a chance to do much of that. We kind of started and then laid the ground, and then the survival thing happened. And so we were probably, you know, had the movie not come about, we would probably, like, you know, come back, looked through all the content that we have and, you know, figured what we can create with what we have, just to, you know, also to fulfill our duties to the sponsors as best as we could and everything else. But then obviously, you know, the movie happened, and that kind of, it was actually really good for all the partners, because, you know, they were obviously a little bit discouraged that we didn't make it, and it was kind of a much shorter kind of endeavor. But then what ended up is that, you know, like, you know, years on, we're actually at the peak of it now. Like, even though we're, you know, this happened 4 or 5 years ago. So, you know, I think, and that's kind of the beauty of it for me and Omar. I'm sure if he was on the call, he would on the show, he would do the same. You know, this whole thing has been like a really kind of awesome adventure for us, because, you know, none of us had anything to do with film. None of us ever thought, like, you know, we'd sort of be in this kind of experience, have our own sort of story made somehow, and then, you know, go to all these people and go all these places and meet all these people. So it's been really fun. And I think we've enjoyed it because we had zero expectations. Everything is a bonus for us. And so that's been really nice. And that's kind of been our attitude, you know, even going into the next leg of things. You know, we've kind of exceeded any expectation that we've kind of set for ourselves initially. You know, it's kind of like, you know, going to the casino and you've already made your money back and now you're just enjoying yourself. So we got a second life. Like, as far as we're concerned, like, we shouldn't.
That's really how you lose the money. That's how you lose the money. That's the switch right there. Sorry, go on, Omar.
I don't do much gambling, as you figured from.
Yeah, for sure.
It's much.
This was a gamble. Growing, right? This was a gamble. This was a gamble. I'm trying to make my money back.
And you know, it was an insane sort of, you know, bonding experience between Omar and I. Like, you know, Omar and I knew each other well, but we didn't know each other like that well. Like, we were friends, but we were kind of more like, you know, very good acquaintances that had met a few times, but really clicked, but never really kind of had the chance to really spend a significant amount of time with each other. And then we went into this experience where we got to spend more time and got to know each other, you know, on a deeper level than any two people can imagine in most cases. And you know, we both know very well that I know that if it wasn't for Omar Noor, I wouldn't have survived. He knows the same for him. And that kind of, I think the thing is, like, no matter how much we tell the story, like, our relationship is such that, like, I know he's the only one that really understands what happened that day and what we both had to do to survive. And I think that's kind of you know, it's one of those things that we'll always have. And it's just been, it's also been like a great pleasure kind of seeing how our relationship has kind of matured, because we've heard a lot of stories of people, like, you know, two rowers gone through the Atlantic kind of thing, reached the finish line, did everything, never spoke to each other again.
Mm.
And so within a situation like this, where everything actually that could have gone wrong went wrong, like, you know, we managed, actually, like, our relationship has sort of, you know, thrived through it. And I think in the documentary, I think you'll see two characters that kind of seem quite different from each other, but hopefully people will also see that how that difference between us and sort of that chemistry also kind of made it work in a way.
Oh yeah. I mean, you can definitely see the difference, but you can definitely see the connection there. Right. I think when Omar Noor was talking about being in the cabin, right, trapped in the cabin, and he's like, oh, and I was thinking, what do I do? What to do? And then all I'm thinking is, Omar Samar outside? Is he safe? Is he attached? Right. And then when you were talking, you're like, and all I was thinking was, is Omar Noor okay in the cabin? Yeah. You know what I mean? So you're both very different in the way you orate, right? Noor is very just like gregarious, and yeah, you know what I mean? And you're a bit more introverted,
yeah,
in the way you come across. But even though there's those differences, it was so evident that you were both trying to look after each other. And you can't fake that. You know what I mean? Like, someone could go, okay, say this, right? Pretend that you care. And you can see it. You can feel it. But you completely understood how much this brought you both together, which is, you know, part of the draw of this whole thing. Because the story is ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. Like, two people looking to do this and you've never rowed. It's just like, why would they do this? So it's just watching you two kind of navigate this whole thing is just, you know, I keep saying it, but it's super compelling, you know?
Kevin, I'm just going to ask you a quick question. Do your viewers know what this film is about? Do you put a trailer in front of it, or?
Yeah, so there'll be the review of the film before the conversation.
Great.
Right, so okay. Yeah, everyone will know, yeah, what's
the
going
idea
on.
What's going on. Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Kevin, where are you based?
Sorry?
You're based where are you based?
Oh, I'm in London.
In London. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's where I was, that's where I was born.
Okay.
I was born not too far from Wimbledon.
Can you tell by the accent?
Yeah.
All right. Like, I get the, you know, the crossing the ocean. There's a lot of refugees cross the ocean, but they also a lot walk. So, like, wouldn't have, like, maybe doing the Mohab or something like that would be an easier, you know, situation to kind of
do. Well, again, I think that's also important to note that, like, the desire to do the adventure was the thing that was the seed. And then it was, we're doing this great thing, and it's maybe going to, if we make it, that's what our thinking was. If we make it, it's going to gather a lot of, like, kind of attention and so on. And we'd like to very much have a cause attached to this that can then hopefully, like, get some spotlight from this, you know, PR that might kind of be generated. And so it just then made sense, you know, doing a crossing of a body of water to, that just felt like a, and it was very much something that was very much in my top of mind for me at the time, you know, during that time, 2017, it was something that was very much at the forefront. It was interesting though, because, you know, the first question we asked ourselves was, it like, that's going to make our sponsorship efforts much harder, because it kind of was a politicized issue a little bit and so on. We were like, well, let's just stay course and let's try. We don't know. And we were very fortunate, actually, that DHL at the time actually thought that was a good thing, I think the cause was the thing that really won them over, which was good. And then we because we had so little experience, we wanted to spend most of this year and a half training, rather than having to kind of, you know, be always having this thing hanging on our, I know very well as an adventurer, like, I've so many times I've prepared for a whole year for an expedition, and then the money doesn't come through in time, and then I have to kind of train all over again the year after and so on. So that gave us, that had us more prepared. And I can tell you for sure, had we not prepared in the way that we did, I don't think we'd have survived. The stuff that we did out there, was, you know, whether it was me kind of hanging on that ladder, or, you know, the kind of maneuvers we had to do and the ropes we had to tie and, like, the things that we had to kind of think in real time to survive those 13 hours, would have only been possible. It could have even not been possible with all that training. I mean, we got really unlucky for a very long time and then got very lucky at the end. And but I can for sure, if we kind of had, not really taken the training seriously, I think we would have been in a much, I don't think we would be here right now.
I had to pitch to DHL Express the idea that because they didn't finish the race, a lot of the money wasn't spent. And so I went to the advertising agency in London and pitched the idea with the Omars of, this is going to work out better for you because we're actually going to do a film and we're going to premiere at the Marché at Cannes. And that's going to happen in a couple of months. I'm going to invite you to come and, you know, also taking a risk that I wouldn't actually get the screening slot and that the audience wouldn't come. And then we promised him again that it would be playing in El Guna. That was a big risk we took. They actually came to the festival. They were able to attend the screening as well as a red carpet event. And also an event recognizing the work that UNHCR is doing worldwide, that Omar Sommer and Omar Noor and several stars from the Middle East came. We got a huge, you know, so DHL, even today, for committing to this project after they could have just taken the money back or said, no, we're not interested. They invested in the film. They invested in what played at Marché. And if it wasn't for that investment, the film would have never happened. I think this is important because a lot of filmmakers out there, especially now, they're trying to figure out how to make film. And it's getting harder and harder as the independent film market shrinks up. A lot of independent film houses are closing down. And we as filmmakers have to think out of the box and how do we get our films funded. And a lot of times if you attach your film either to a cause or brand that benefits from your film being made, you can scrap some of the monies together.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely true. That's definitely true, you know. And you know, DHL, they're getting a lot of good press from this, from that association, which, you know, and the spend on this is probably minuscule in compared to, you know what I mean, all the other things they're doing. So to get some good press, this is like, this is such a huge win for them as an organization. And it's a great doc. You know what I mean? That's the big thing. It's a great doc, right? Regardless of anything else. So, you know,
there. How many times do you see DHL in the opening credit bed? It's crazy. I mean, they're literally on the opening credit bed, and that stamp is all over that boat throughout the film. The only other person or organization that's getting as much, you know, hit is Talisker Whiskey Challenge. Talisker is all over this, you know, which is all that, you know, it's the plight for refugees. It's this crossing of open bodies of water. It's their race. But DHL and UNHCR, and obviously UNDP to some degree, is getting a lot of press, and well-deserved for all three. Well-deserved.
Yeah. With the fact that so much footage went in the sea, right? How was it for you trying to piece this together, Marco? Like, what was the edit like? Like, what were those challenges like for you?
I think a good director is someone who knows where his place is. And every good film has a good editor standing behind them. And I have an amazing editor who, you know, he was doing a lot of TV shows, reality television shows based in Athens, where I'm based. And I saw his work, and I wanted someone who could cut quick, like, you know, as these reality shows are. And he basically took it with my scripts, my storyline, which were the five basic points. And he went through the footage, and he kicked me out of the room. And he built this beautiful story. And I came back in, and I worked on the timing, just getting the timing right, just moving things just a little bit, you know, just a little bit of cuts here and there, just getting the timing. And then the music is what makes this film. If you were to listen to this music, this movie with no music, it wouldn't be as impactful. George Cogney, who did Blood Diamonds and did a video with me back in the day called Dangerous Crossings on the same subject. He did this video, which was five pop stars, one from Egypt, one from Sudan, and three from Somalia. They put this amazing song together that he composed, and they wrote. It's in five different languages, and it was just amazing. It toured around the world. It did really well. I approached him on this, and I said, would you consider it? And because George, doing great music, and because of the editor, it's what made the film. I mean, I knew the story going in. I had the story, and it was basically boom, 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 boom. Omar Sommer, Omar Noor. One is calm. One is very over, you know, exaggerated and extremely hyper. Although behind the scenes, one just lets everything go. Yeah, that's no problem. The other one is just tenacious, won't let anything go. And I won't tell you who's who. But together, they are amazing to watch because they really support one another, you know? I mean, it was so easy for them to tell their story. It really was. I was lucky to get this story because the way they tell it is in sync. There's no argument about the story. There might be a minor change in how they want the story presented, but they both gave me the authority to basically drive the story that I felt was important to tell through. And they both, you know, stepped down on any challenges. And usually I was able to get one of them on board with me. And together we would convince the third one of why we felt this was important. And it was always this way. But the film is good. And because the story is good, which is what you said earlier, Kevin, if you've got a good story, I mean, it's almost impossible to mess it up. And so, I really can't take as much credit as I'd like to because A lot of good people behind me helped me do this film.
Well, I mean, it's like a conductor with an orchestra, right? You have incredible musicians, you know, incredible venue of the acoustics and everything like that. But it's that, you know, the composer helps, you know, bring it together, narrate the storyline. So, you know, you've got this incredible story. You have these incredible people and you just help tie it together and lead people in the right direction. So, you know what I mean? It's not a small feat, my friend. Not a small feat.
Right. Yes. Well, we're really excited about the film coming out to the UK. And I'm really excited that it's having a good little run. And I hope your audience has a chance to watch it because it's worth watching.
Oh, man. I think people are going to just love this. You know, it reminded me a bit of, I forget his name. It's Nim something, but he did 14 Peaks, which is on Netflix. He was climbing the 14 highest mountains in the world. And it's just super interesting, just the challenge of it all. And it's those kind of things that I think are just, you know, they capture the audience. And I put this in the same, you know, bed as something like that, you know, as Free Solo and those sorts of documentaries, because people love them, because you know, the people in it survive, right? You know, they were able to get through this whole challenge, but it's how.
But you still have doubt. You still have doubt because it's the film. It's the cinema. Mm. You know, it's like when we all were, I don't know how old you were when Titanic came out, but I was old enough to remember it still. And, you know, in the middle of the film, you forget that everyone dies, okay? Yeah. And you're just washing along and then all of a sudden this iceberg hits and you're like, what's that? Why did that come along? What's going on here? So this film, you kind of like, are they going to make it? I cry every time I watch this film. I cry every time. Not Titanic, Beyond the Raging Sea. But I also cried at The Octopus, you know, the film that won the Oscars, the best documentary about the octopus. Yeah, that kind of ripped my heart out too. Mm. So I guess I cry a lot. But this film is not, it's a happy cry. It's not sad cry because... But someone asked me, do you think this film would be a good narrative? And I think it would be a great drama film. And in fact, the two were approached at Cannes to do this. But I always joke around that one of them has to die in the drama because it would be that much more impactful and interesting. And they can duke it out.
I think I'm already quite somber that I think killing me off is not going to give a satisfaction to the audience. So I think getting the loud gregarious one to die, I think is.
I agree. There's no argument there. I think we both agree. Omar Noor has to go. He's got to go. Okay, because it's easier to film you there in thought, you know. But him quiet in thought after you've died, there's no such thing. He would talk through the whole moment of silence. He would ruin that moment. You would be nice and quiet. So.
But you convince him to do this challenge with you, and then you're going to just kill him off. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
What a buddy you are.
I think Summer is frozen, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, I think he is.
Yeah, he's absolutely frozen. I thought maybe I irritated him a bit with that comment. No, there's no doubt he would be the one that would have to go just because, you know, he's, what's that Nemo, the fish? He's very much Nemo, the fish, Omar Noor is. Yeah, and we lost him. Yeah, and we finally lost him. Maybe that's, yeah. I don't know if you're going to do a list of the screenings. I mean, I can blatter them off really quick, but they're pretty much playing everywhere. And if anyone's confused, they can go to the website at www.beyondtheragingsea.com and go to watch. And it has all the listings. It's being updated every 3 days because so many new listings get added. So do check it out because it's playing all the way. From now, I think through May as well, it'll continue to play in different select theaters, primarily small independent theaters, which of course need our support. And I'm hoping that your audience takes the chance, the time to support these incoming, you know, independent films that are coming to the theaters, not only this one, but other ones that hopefully come in as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just about blockbuster films from big studios. I think people enjoy indies because a lot of times they're the best films. You get so... Yeah. And it's where a lot of the big stars come from. You know, how many times you watch an indie and you see someone, you'd be like, that was a great performance. And then a few months later, they get picked up for a big franchise or something like that. So, you know, these are the building blocks, man. This is where you get this authentic storytelling. So, no, people will definitely come out and watch Beyond the Raging Sea. Like, is there, how else can they follow you, Marco? And, you know, what else you're doing?
I run an organization called Hi Omar. Sorry. It sounded like we killed you off.
Yeah. It was a great timing.
I think
a little edit where Marco says, no, I think I'm going to kill Omar off. And I just...
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. We changed. Yeah, we decided.
Yeah, because we changed our minds.
We're just like, yeah. Oh, it looks like Nur's the one. Yeah.
Right? The gods have spoken. The gods have spoken. And I, as a filmmaker, have two films releasing kind of in the same time. I just had another film release in the United States called Latin 4 Plus. I am a documentary filmmaker. That's my main role in life. And I'm pretty much found online, just Marco Orsini, comma, filmmaker. And you can find me on any of my public platforms and my companies. But my real love in life is I started an organization called IEFTA, IEF as in Frank, TA.org. And we have been mentoring filmmakers in emerging markets since 2006. We are throughout the MENA region. We are in South Asia, countries like Bangladesh, Nepal, Bhutan, Mongolia. We're in Sudan, Ethiopia, Egypt, Palestine, Lebanon. And we bring these really talented filmmakers to different markets throughout Europe, like EFM in Berlin, Marché at Cannes, Rotterdam, Torino, just to name a few. And we partner with these organizations, and we've had great success. We've kind of like... you know, circle our wagons and work together in getting these filmmakers to where they've gone. And usually they are Oscar nominated from their countries. We end up getting around 2 to 5 Oscar potentials every year from these countries. So the work is good. And I enjoyed it immensely. But Omar Samra, who I'll let speak now, is actually a very important public speaker.
So Omar, how can people keep track of everything that you're doing?
Sure, that's easy. I think on most social media platforms, including Instagram, I'm on Omar Samra, Samra being Sierra Alpha, Mark Romeo Alpha. And that's, you know, usually on obviously during these times, I'm going to be posting a lot about the film. You know, typically, I run an adventure travel business and I do a bit of... speaking around a lot of storytelling around, you know, the different adventures that I've been on, and try as much as I can to do advocacy work since the film on refugees, but obviously various things related to my work, like, you know, climate change and so on. And I should do better at posting, but basically, like, my platform is a mishmash of all of these things.
Okay, splendid. Well, people, all the links will be on the website, so make sure you go through, follow Omar, follow Marco, and go see the film, right? As Marco said, it's going to be playing all over the place, all over the country, which is incredible. It's magnificent. Marco, quickly, those that aren't in the UK, where else will it be going? Do you know right now?
Yes, I do. They can get on a plane and fly to New York and see it there the following week. And then after that, they can fly to LA and see it there. Anywhere in the Middle East, it's on Netflix. So they can buy it there. But it is regionally blocked from playing on any online platforms until we get our, you know, confirm our sales deals. But for right now, you can only see it in theaters in the UK and in the US. And only, I mean, the UK, it's playing everywhere. In the US, it's only playing in select theaters in New York and Los Angeles for now. It's a dribble. A trickle in the US, which is how the film market works. If you're an independent filmmaker, if it does well, these first couple of screenings, then they'll expand it.
Yeah.
Whereas in the UK, for some reason or another, they've you know, grabbed it in all of the markets, which, you know, we're very lucky for that. We're hoping it does well and people actually get a chance to go out and see it.
Oh man, I am sure they will. And yeah, all my US people, go out and support so it can, you know, just flood the land. So, yo, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And, yeah, being flexible with your schedules too. Thank you.
Kevin, thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Hey, no worries. It's been a pleasure talking with you people. Go follow Marco Orsini and Omar Samar. Give Omar Noir a check as well and go see Beyond the Raging Sea. You will not be disappointed. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Boom. That was, man, like, it was just, you know, the day was kind of crazy. So, you know, we had to reschedule, you know, it was on me. I had to push it back an hour. So I didn't get as much time as we could have gone on. There's so much more, so much food left on the table, as it were, people. But still, I feel that was a great conversation. Extremely interesting. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you took away interesting things, interesting viewpoints, insights, all of that jazz. And it's made you kind of, you know, think a little bit more about this whole refugee thing, you know. Now, as I said, look, I've got the links on my site, right? So obviously you can find, you know, the review, this, you know, on the website, you know, the links to the video if you're not watching that already. And yeah, I've got links to some of those UK screenings, you know, their website, their socials, all of that jazz. So boom, go follow, go support, you know, go check it out, right? Because it's super compelling. Only, I mean, 71 minutes, people. So nothing crazy, right? Nothing crazy, but you're going to be gripped from beginning to the end, right? And remember, this is part two. So there's part one. We've got five films. Go check out part one. Share with your friends. And we will see you next week. And I can tell you right now, next week is as well going to be another double header, baby. Because that's what we do over on Echo Chamber, man. We bring you these incredible insights to these incredible creatives. So enjoy the film watching. Until then, peace.